Ah, oh, you're a stud, Coulter. Oski wee wee, buddy.
Awesome. Thank
I know you still bleed blue on the inside, Coulter. Go Toronto. All right, that's a
black
wrap
and
for
gold, baby. Leave them alone.
Hey, we'll agree. He's a great.
Hold all the way here, man.
Let's go.
Go Griffs. Go Griffs. Let's agree on that one. Hello and welcome to At the 55, your home for OUA football. Me and Tom are back on the mics with a special mini-series we're calling Draft Stories, where we're going to profile some special individuals who made the leap from OUA football into the CFL and just looking at what that process looked like with the draft on our hands. Tom, I'll give you the pleasure of introducing our guest. So, Tom, how the heck are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Another very special guest, somebody who means a lot to me and having been a very small part of his own football experience here. Starting right guard for the Hamilton Tiger Cats, Mr. Coulter Woodmansey. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited to be here. Appreciate it.
Very happy to have
Tom,
you on, sir.
My last year at Guelph, you were my coach for a bit there.
I sure was.
Awesome. Yeah, man. He's the first one to shout me out, calling me, saying I was the best player in the league that year for O-line. I remember Tom's always pumping my tires. I appreciate it.
I do actually have a special story that I will get into here regarding that. While I was coaching there, right before I guess the pandemic hit, I was also doing some part-time work at Home Depot, and probably 2 months before the draft, who do I bump into but Orlando Steinauer in the Home Depot in there? And I go, Coach, I'm such a big fan of the Cats and whatever. We get to chatting a little bit. And I go, hey, listen, I got somebody for you. And he does the, okay, sure. Because I'm sure so many people come up and talk to him. And I go, look at Coulter Woodmansey. Second team All-Canadian, should have been a first teamer, can play multiple positions, named your stats, your height, your weight. And he started, oh, second team All-Canadian out of Guelph? Okay, I'll take a peek. And then sure enough later, first overall pick for the Cats with number 5 in the draft, baby.
Man, so, I love it. I'm going to all right, I'm giving you credit. I think you got it. You know, you at least put my name in there for the running.
Oh yeah.
Love
yeah.
It.
So it was a real when I saw your name get taken by the Cats, my team, and after having that conversation, man, I did some sellying for sure.
That's
so it was a hell of a thing.
Honestly, not a better person to meet up with, because O is like, he's the nicest guy and like best coach I've ever had.
That's amazing.
He's awesome.
Well, you know, Coulter, we know where you're at now, and Tom shouted out the Guelph background, of course. That's one of the ties that you and I have.
Yep.
You came in 2016, the year after I had just left at Guelph. But for you and I as well, not that we knew each other, but it goes that further step back, us both being from Toronto. I'm representing your high school here with the Northern Red Knight sweater for those tuning in via YouTube. Of course, though, that was the school I was technically rivals with, being a North Toronto Collegiate alumni, though it wasn't really a rivalry, because normally a rivalry means that each team possibly has a shot at winning each year, and we never even played you because we were so inferior to where you were at. But, you know, before we dive into the mechanics of your draft and just your whole career and everything like that, I would be remiss without just starting talking about the Toronto piece of it, because, and I don't think I've shared this with you. I feel bad wearing this sweater, not because I'm a North Toronto guy, but actually I teach at Central Tech now. But
really?
Yes, sir. Go Blues.
I did not know that.
But Toronto football has been a thing that there's been a lot of conversation about, if only because every time I hop on this mic darn near, I'm going to bring it up in some capacity. But I know you're really well connected still with that community, with how much your family's been involved with the Junior Argos program. You grew up playing for that organization, and I guess the OFC at the time, and now there's part of the OSFL and everything like that. And I know that your parents are still connected with that program, at least I saw them last year there. Just kind of talk a little bit about your experience growing up playing football. Northern, for those who don't know, one of the powerhouse programs, high school programs in the city of Toronto. The Junior Argos have been around for some years. And just how, where you kind of see Toronto football at, to the extent you're still keeping tabs on it.
Yeah, so for me, first off, Zach, known about you the entire time. We have connected a little bit over the years, and you were a legend at Guelph. So ever since I stepped foot in there, I knew all about you. Coach Mike always talked you up. He missed you from the day you left. And then in regards to Toronto football, so for me, my a little bit with my story there, went to Northern, played Junior Argos, as you mentioned. Loved the people of the Toronto Junior Argos, and I'll just pump their tires a little bit here because they're the best people I've ever got to know. Dan Grossi, unfortunately, passed away last year, was my first ever football coach and then became president of the Junior Argos. Still friends with his wife and his amazing daughter, and they're just good people. And then we got everyone down there from like Carlo Honorati and so many great people who I'm still friends with. And Carlo was at my son's first birthday, and he was my second ever football coach, and he got him this cool little, you know, car thing, that like this little gravity fed car thing to teach him how to do these little games. And there's just so many great people that are involved in Toronto football. And these are just two examples of amazing people in that organization that made it so as soon as I finished high school, I jumped into their board of directors and their coaching and started doing fundraising for them and did whatever I could to be involved and help, because football in Canada, as you guys know, is it's an, a bit of an uphill battle with what's given, with the support we're given. So that I was involved with them, Toronto Junior Argos. I went to Northern. Northern was a great experience. As you've mentioned, we have some really good support and coaching and facilities, and a lot of the school cares, which is fantastic. So I grew up in a, as since I was 12, just ingrained in football, because the culture in that Toronto football, when you really dive into it and make it your own and really attempt to connect with your people around you and the coaches, because they want to give back to you. There's really good people around there. Like, as I said, Junior Argos and Northern just being one example, but there's a lot of really great teams in the GTA for summer football and for high school football that have good people. And the people who are in football in Ontario are in general really good people who are giving back, not for financial reasons, but because they love the game and they want to give back because it gave so much to them.
Absolutely incredible. And having you be a part of that, I really love the direction of just football in Ontario and where it's going. I think the Toronto football organization, especially with you joining the board and things, it's always been strong, but I love the direction in terms of where it's going. Even just, I believe it was this past year, was one of the first times that they've done like an all-star showcase with the city of Toronto. And just seeing stuff like that is so incredible. And seeing all of the work that JT Sui and the folks over at Football Ontario is doing is really outstanding. So I wanted to make sure that I shouted that out before I got into even just talking to you a little bit more about your experiences here.
Yeah, and I was on the board of the Toronto Juniors, just the summer football team. I'd love to get more involved with Toronto football, the program as a whole. Mm-hmm. My parents are even still on the board for the Junior Argos. So with everything I have with football and family, it's hard for me to be there enough for them to save the board spot for me. I'd love to be – I'm still a part with the Junior Argos, but you know, my parents run the registration for them, but I can't be there as much as I'd like to.
That's amazing. Well,
just super quick, Tom. I hate to break your heart, Coulter. I'm coaching with the Etobicoke Eagles this summer, so I feel terrible
for you.
Well, and of course, though, your Northern connection, you just got to give the Gretis is a call, and you know you'll be on that Football Toronto board that. So
yeah, they're going crazy. They're so good for the Toronto league and Northern and Etobicoke. Like everything they do is it's huge. It's huge for Toronto football.
Going into a little bit more of your own football history before we really start getting into the CFL and your draft experience and all of that, I really wanted to talk to you about your experience at Guelph. Obviously a very proud Griffin, one of the best to ever don on that Guelph O-line, I have confidence in saying, and that's a very strong statement for the quality of offensive linemen that have come out of there, Mr. Bader Shammai being one of them.
Legend.
I'm interested to see what your experience was like, because obviously you come in 2016, right after the big 2015 Yates Cup victory. You have Coach K-Mac for 16 and 17, Coach Galloway in 18, and then Coach Shan in 19. Mm-hmm. So a little bit tumultuous at the bare minimum, although the one constant at least is Coach McDonald in there, one of the best to do it. So I wanted to just see, what was your experience like? Obviously, I believe the stat that I saw was you had 32 overall dresses, but 28 starts at the University of Guelph throughout your entire time there, which is absolutely outstanding. So being somebody that's on that front line as one of the captains in some of your later years, what was your experience like with all of those different changing head coaches throughout your time there?
Yeah. So like, as you talked about, like the most important thing for the offensive line was that Coach Mike was there, and he was so constant, and he kept his culture in his room and for everyone that was around him, like not just the offensive line, because who he was as a person spreads out to everyone he touches, because he's an amazing person. Still to this day, I can't say enough good things about the way he is. I kind of think of him as like a second father and everything for me, because just from the moment I committed there, he put everything, and he genuinely cares about his players, and not just about how they perform for him on the field, but who they are as people. And it's not just myself who's done well in football. It's every guy he's committed, like he's had play for him. He has been committed to being a part of their life and improving them as people. But I get to Guelph, and I committed under Stu Lang. Then he steps away, and we get K-Mac. It was a bit of a interesting first year because we came off of that huge run of Zach's time where he was incredible and that he carried the team to 7-1 every year, you know? and we go, I think it was either, you know, I think it was 3-5 or I think it was 3-5 and somehow sneak into the playoffs, though. And I was lucky that when I got to Guelph, I had Andrew Pickett as my mentor and Eric Starzella and a bunch of other guys who ended up CFL bound and just a great culture of people. And I played next to Kyle Frazier in his fifth year, another guy who had a CFL shot. And, my first year, I got really great mentoring and great opportunity around me. So I started a couple games as a rookie and dressed, and I got a lot of opportunity to grow and learn and actually figure out, like, oh, this isn't just going to be easy. I can't just walk out here and play football with all these great athletes. Like, it's going to take some time. I can't just be 6'5" and 300 plus pounds and it worked out, right? Like, you actually have to put a lot into it. That off season was huge for me. I got a lot of help with training. Jordan Foley was our trainer that year still. He was amazing, really pushed. And then we had Andrew Graham following that. And he, again, huge development for me. And from my first to second year, I got the opportunity to start going into my second year, held that down for the year. I think that was Andrew's last year. So we had a really solid offensive line there too. Colin Jerome, Andrew, Jalen, Ziggy, and then a bunch of the guys who came in with me, like Petrie and everything, and really fun group. And we had K-Mac's leadership, and we had a little bit of turmoil there. It wasn't the best year. I still loved K-Mac, but it obviously things didn't go that well for us. And, you know, we had some moving parts, and, you know, it wasn't easy. And then we had to – then things moved on from there, and we got Galloway, and I loved Coach Galloway. Like, we made it to the Yates Cup that year. With all the adversity and everything else we went through in that third year, we ended up going to the Yates Cup, and we were a really good team. Obviously, Western won the Vanier that year, I believe, and they were killing it. Or was it the year before? Well, either way, they beat the tar out of us 2 years in a row there. And but no, it was that third year. I was starting to step into a bit of a leadership role, and I forgot to actually get my feet under me. Colin Jerome was still there. He was our center. He was our leader. He was the captain of the offensive line. And we had a great group, and Todd Galloway did a great job. But then we moved on to Coach Shan, and, you know, things weren't easy for him either. Like, come in during COVID, you lose all your veteran leadership. You have all these other things going on. And, like, obviously there's no excuses. Winning is the only currency in football. If you don't perform, you're not going to have your job forever. And I'm very happy for him to get the opportunity in Calgary. But, you know, we had that, and the good thing with us is that whole time going into Coach Shan and everything, we had Coach Mike, the Rock, there making sure that the O-line stayed taken care of and everything worked out well for us. And that's why, like, even to this day, like, we had Spencer Masterson drafted last year. We have consistently put out and developed offensive linemen, and Coach Mike was a huge part of that. And now that he's coming out of retirement to come back to Guelph, that's huge for the organization.
Mm-hmm. I do just have one quick follow-up question before you get into that, Zach. I think, as far as I can tell, the rest of the football community was very surprised when you guys go to that Yates Cup, like you said, in 18, and then 19 comes around, and it's Coach Shan that stepped in. Now, obviously, yeah, People have a lot of things to say about Coach Shan and his tenure there, but before that happens, are you, as the players, surprised that Coach Galloway isn't given that head coaching role, or what was the vibe like when that happened?
So when Coach Galloway was in, I think they announced it was as an interim coach, and he was going to have the opportunity to get it. So we didn't really know where it was going to go from there. We knew that it was going to be open to whatever the university chose afterwards, that it wasn't a guarantee just because we had success under Coach Galloway that he was going to, like, retain the job. I was hopeful that he would. I really like Coach Galloway. Like, he's a great guy. He really did a good job. Like, I think he was underrated as a head coach in the way that he really cared about us as people, in the way that he, I think a really great coach, like a marketable great coach, isn't just if you're a good scheme and you'd make sure that you have, you know, it's not about being smarter than everyone else in the league. It's about making the people around you better and giving them an opportunity to thrive at a high level. And that's something that Coach O has done at a level that I've never, like, he's, from the moment I walked in there, everyone every day in the building gets better because he's there and because of the culture he's built. And Coach Galloway, I think, did a very good job of that. So that's something I don't think he got enough credit for. And when he was let go, I wasn't happy about it by any means, but I understand the business of football is extremely fickle. And it's really hard to keep jobs. And it's the same thing as players, right? Since I've been at Ticats, I'm pretty sure there's like 10 players left from the time I joined the team to now. And same thing for coaching, right? It's tough. You have to win if you want to keep your job. It's just is what it is.
I echo everything you said about Coach Galloway. We've talked about him a lot on this podcast, especially with the success he's now been having at Laurier. Mm-hmm. And he's one of my favorite people I've met in my, not just my football journey, but, mm-hmm. but in my life. But amongst all the, you know, you mentioned so many great names, and like, I don't think people realize, like, when you said that offensive line of Jalen Guthrie, Andrew Pickett, Colin Jerome, yourself, and then Kyle Frazier, like that, or sorry. And then Eric Starcella, Ziggy, like that is like, that's crazy. I don't think people quite realize how nuts that is. Colin and Jerome,
Johnny
by the way,
Augustine behind us running the ball too,
and Johnny Augustine running the ball. Yeah, Colin Jerome. So the only individual I've ever met who puts his socks on first and then his underpants and everything else. It's an interesting move, but I love you, Jerome. But you mentioned, of course, with the transition of those coaches, Sheehan part of the difficulty of that for him coming in with COVID, you know, looming at the time. And let's talk about now your draft and you getting picked up by the Ticats fifth overall as a funny little tidbit, of course, connected with the Johnny Manziel trade. I'm curious what thoughts you have of that. But, you know, we're in the midst of combine season right now. We'll definitely talk about your brother at some point in the midst of this with him going through this experience, but an experience that you didn't get to have. Like, talk to us about what your draft, your journey to the draft was during the early months of 2020.
Yeah. So, kind of leading into the draft, I guess East West would be the start for me. I'd go to East West. I felt like I didn't do as well as I wanted to testing. And I feel like I practiced okay. And then one-on-ones I did okay, but in the game I played very well. Then I get into it and I start talking to agents and I sign with Fred Weiner, which has been amazing. I've had nothing but great things to say about him. He's given me a lot of good opportunities, just took my contract with him. So I sign with him, and then Ticats do a long form interview with me before the 2019 season. Like, we sat down with Drew Allen for an hour, plus they send this crazy long, like, document asking you questions, like ridiculously long. I think it's just to see how many questions you'll actually answer, because they get into questions like, what's your mom's height and weight? And I'm not asking my mom her weight. It's just off the table. I apologize to the coaches there, you know? But so I get into that, and that was the only one thing. Then get through the season. Going into the draft, I am working my ass off to go test well and play well and put myself in the best opportunity. I was lucky enough to get invited to the National, but I didn't know really where I was going to stack up. It's so hard to know. I know I was second team All-Canadian, which is great, but there's so many great players every year that the league is just packed with talent. Plus, you have all the guys down south. So I getting ready for the draft, and you know, we're 2 weeks out. The East Regional just takes place, and then boom, COVID shuts down the whole world on that same day. So the East Regional comes out. They announce that the National's canceled. I've done all this training, which isn't gone, right? Like, I still want to be in great shape, but the combine's over. No combine, all that interview, everything's gone. And it's just, we're stuck in this weird situation where I'm doing Zoom meetings with teams. Interesting enough, Ticats, I didn't talk to at all, period, like, except for the night before the draft. So, like, in 2019, I talked to them before the season. Night before the draft, they give me a quick phone call to see how I was doing and, you know, ask a handful of questions, and all of a sudden they draft me fifth overall, and I thought I was going late in the draft, but that was great. I wasn't even sitting on my couch. I wasn't even paying attention because I didn't think I was going to get picked that high. But yeah, no, so the draft process was really weird. So I did a couple of workout things for the teams, did a video of me weighing in, doing a video of a couple things and some Zoom meetings, but that was really it. It was just a weird time in the world right then. So we did what we could. You know, Fred was a big part of that because he talked to teams and he got, you know, this is what they're looking for. If you can put together this video of you, you know, benching and you doing a video for that they're going to do at the combine and stuff like that. And we sent it off and worked out. But yeah, it was really weird. It was a really weird time.
Well, first and foremost, before we really dive into that, I want to make sure to all of our listeners out there that they know that Coulter is incredibly humble as a player. He was one of the best offensive linemen that I've ever had the privilege of being able to coach. The dude, not only had the strength, the speed, the handwork, but you knew the game inside and out. There was one time that I'll never forget. I'm still a budding assistant offensive line coach trying to get my legs underneath me. We're playing against Waterloo in that 2019 season. And something breaks down where somebody comes free. And I'm looking over on the up in the booth there, and I say, oh, it came from the right side. I think that's Coulter's guy. And so I call down the coach, Mike, and I say that after the game, Coulter comes up to me. That wasn't my guy. They shifted like this. The blitz came through. The guy came here. So I had my man. Oh, called out the coach completely because I had it dead wrong. He was absolutely right. He got it right. He called it out the right time. So yeah, I wanted to make sure that I shouted out you for that in particular. You knew your stuff even better than the friggin' coach did.
I don't know, man. Normally, and my general policy of that, and I should have just eaten it with in general. That the way to go with it and the way to be a good teammate in general, I believe, is, you know, shit hits the fan, bullets are flying, coaches make mistakes, players make mistakes, and you know, just do the best you can to move forward in that moment. So like the next day we always see stuff on tape. But no, I put a lot of work into it. So like the mental side of the game, I don't think enough guys put enough effort and time into it. Like they just say, oh, that guy's really football smart or whatever, and they just assume that it comes naturally. Like I can say about the Ticats and when Isaac Love, like, the amount of time we put in as a group to know that we know our stuff as a unit was a ton of time. Like with the Ticats, we're there pulling 12, 13-hour days. That you don't have to be. You only have to be there 4.5 hours, but to make sure that we're physically ready to play, but also mentally, like you need to put a ton of time in to as a group, as an offensive line, to see things the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most definitely. And so with all of the insanity that was that year in terms of COVID and everything else, what was your first experiences on that team like? Obviously, you mentioned that the Zoom calls and the team calls with the coaches and that. What was it like meeting the players? Did you meet them over Zoom? Mm-hmm. Did you get a chance to actually be in person with them? What was that like?
So get drafted 2020. It's super exciting, right? Like I just got drafted as in the first round. I didn't know where I was getting picked. I thought I was getting picked third, fourth round. Did not think I was going to get picked early. I was like, oh, maybe Toronto would get me in the 20th pick because it's like whatever the conditional pick. They have to pick a regional guy. I'm like, we'll see. But so I end up getting picked. I'm as excited as ever. My family's freaking out. Everyone's freaking out. And then things just go like completely quiet. And like I got a package with some clothes from the Ticats. Never go to the actual Tim Hortons field till 2021. Like, never got to go into the building for an entire calendar year. And the season gets delayed. It gets cut down. I've met the players a couple times on like Zoom meetings where we installed a little bit of offense stuff, but it was all really minimal until the season kicked off. But walk in, it was also the weirdest season because everyone's set up. Everyone has to do completely. Like you have to go and do, what was it? Like you have to quarantine prior to the season. Then you have to go in and everyone's in hotel rooms. And then you have to wear monitors to make sure that you're separated from everyone. And then you have to go on the field and it's training camp. But it was also really weird because I genuinely didn't think the Ticats would have picked me out of anyone because they had a stacked offensive line at the time and great Canadians. You know, like with Redenberg and Sirocco and Jesse Gibbons and a lot of other really great guys that are there. And Kay Okafor and Chris Van Zyl. I forget about him because he's just the ratio breaking incredible tackle coming off an MLS season. So, but yeah, so I didn't think I was getting picked there, and I show up to camp, and yeah, I might have been a first round pick, but with all that talent there, I knew that if I wanted to dress or play or do anything, I had to outwork everyone and get that opportunity. Because talking about guys who, you know, Rev Sirocco and Jesse Gibbons, all were first round picks, and if I want to play, got to take one of their jobs, you know, like it's the way the CFL is, you know. And then also looking at a lot of other talented players in that room, like Kay Okafor was a he's a dog. Like, he was built like a truck, played all the line, D-line, really hard, great work ethic, really good player too. Yeah.
Now, well, actually, a funny story with that as well, Coulter, because I guess in that time you made your way back to Toronto, because some point during those months of 2020, I'm driving around Mount Pleasant and Eglinton running errands, and who do I see like shoveling concrete for, I guess, as GPW construction, wearing some Hamilton gear, none other than you. I guess you were back home at the time, or maybe it was your brother. I don't know. You two kind of look similar if you're not really getting a good look at the face, so no doubt a weird year for you. Am I right in thinking, were you back home and working for your pop's company for a bit there?
Yeah, so I was in 2020. I was living at Young and Eglinton, just around.
Yeah, there we go.
I was working at GPW Construction, doing this very cool. We had this one structural project that there's considerable like termite damage and a lot of other things. So we ended up doing like a full foundational repair, just lifting up sections of the house, replacing all the walls, replacing termite damage. It was quite a lot of fun. So that entire off season, that 1 year, I was spending the days doing that. I had the Tunac Tepe working with me as well, and Curtis also was out a little bit. And we'd go right from work, right to the field, and we would run and do all of our field work and then go right to my parents. Luckily, had enough of a gym that we could train at our place, and lucky. So we did that every day. Work, run, go train. And I know Datuma had an incredible career. He just had a little bit of unlucky health issues. Popped his knee.
And you know, we'll get into your brother being in this current draft class for sure. But I love you brought up Datuma, gets drafted by the Elks. Couple picks after Kian Schaefer Baker. I mean, that year, and it was the first year we did any coverage for the draft, like live on our Instagram page, and it was such a great year for OUA talent. It's a darn shame that it was so real with just the COVID piece of it. But one name in particular, before we, you know, get into talking about Curtis, because, you know, we loved getting to talk about, you know, obviously you had a lot of teammates on that. You talk about the regional pick for the Argos. That's, of course, Sam Achampong from Laurier. But another D tackle I want to just ask you about. Goes 16 overall to the Montreal Alouettes out of Queens. Cam Lawson, you must have had some battles with him. Can you talk about what that guy was like having to deal with in the trenches?
Yeah, he's a very powerful guy. Like, he's great against the run, good bull rush, good rip, really good, solid player. At Queens, he basically two got the center on every play. Like, they just said he's good enough to eat up two gaps and we can play at the light box. Didn't always work out for him. It's quite the task, and it wasn't because he wasn't doing a great job. Obviously he was, if he's getting picked 16th overall. And then when he gets to Montreal, he ends up getting traded to Winnipeg, and he's playing great now. He just got another contract, and guys, a really good solid player. He's gonna have a long career. He's great.
Now, keeping on that same kind of vibe here, with your experience, obviously extensive, starting at Guelph and now being a starter with the Hamilton Tiger Cats, how big is that jump going from the OUA to the CFL in terms of the caliber that you're playing against, the what's expected of you? Obviously, it's the pros versus university football, but what is that gap? What is that jump like?
So it's interesting, like, kind of how to explain it. So, like, the way I think of it, a lot of it is consistency, right? Like, you're going to face some guys who are physically like not the same, but like some of the CFL players. Like, there's going to be guys who have a jump from where any of the guys you'll see in the OUA, with a couple, a handful of exceptions. But it's consistency in technique, consistency in your approach for preparation, consistency in the way that you take care of your body, the way you do your off-season training, like the way that you take care of yourself and prepare yourself has to be at a very high level. And then the consistency that you have to improve at to stay in the league. So, like, for me, the day I walked into training camp, I would not have been ready to start. But head down, work ethic, buying into all the stuff Coach O and our rest of our coaching staff and players teached, and taking advantage of those great names I mentioned to you that were on the Ticats, like Revenberg and Van Zyl and Soraka, who were like direct mentors to me. Like, specifically Revenberg and me, I put insane amount of hours together working on film and technique and in the gym and just like a culture. And now with David Beard there, we made this a priority. So, like, when I get to the Ticats, I'm not ready, but I work as hard as I can through training camp to improve. And something Coach O talks about is weigh a lot. What are you working on today? And actually writing down something to work on every single day and making sure you can check that box and doing that type of stuff. And then through the first 8 weeks of the season, where I dressed a couple games, but basically was just hanging out watching games, and it tore me apart and being on the P, not the PR, but just doing scout team and every day getting in there early, getting in the gym, working with the strength coach. And like the person I developed into before those 8 weeks, like that's where the jump came from. It wasn't just being, oh, it's a big jump. You have to be this much more talented to get there. It's who you're going to be. Cause the day you get drafted, you're not good enough. Like no one is. Not saying that this guy isn't specifically good enough. You need to work your ass off every day to keep that job or to get that job. And once you think you're good enough, you're not, you're going to fail. Like me today, like if I'm working as hard as I can to get ready for the season, but if I show up to training camp and I am not with the mindset that I need to earn my spot starting and I need to earn my spot to play in that next game and I need to work my ass off, like you're going to lose it. So the difference really is how hard it is and how much effort you need to put into every day, just keeping your job and keeping your opportunity. And like the thing is, like I find it's your responsibility to do those things. Like you have people that rely on you to feed their family. Those coaches, those fellow players, the city of Hamilton who like spends their hard-earned money to come watch you play. Like it changes. It is now not just a game. It is a like people rely on you. So that's kind of like sure. There's a jump that is like strictly technical, but it's the amount that you like the care factor that is the biggest jump to me.
And so many of us at even just the OUA level have either experienced this personally or had a teammate who had that moment of like, I'm no longer the big fish in the small pond where I was just elite speed in high school and I didn't really need to work those skills, or you're 6'5", 3'10", and you just like, you can't teach that. You can just bully guys. So I want to now transition, because as you're talking about like that realization of that it's more than a game. There's all these things. It's this commitment. It's this 13-hour days of study. You have a younger brother, Curtis Woodmansey, also coming from the same pathway that you're going from, Junior Argos, Northern Red Knights, Guelph Griffins, now having a different experience than you going through the draft of having been at the regional combine, the invitational combine that Tom was at, and getting ready for the draft. What kind of conversations are you having with him? Obviously not being able to connect through the exact experience he's going through, but in terms of relaying some of those lessons you're talking about, and I know he's got a great work ethic as you do, but of those things that like, I know you think you know, but just trust me when I say you don't really know yet. And as best as you can, listen to my words when I say it's different. And in a way that it's nitpicking. It's everyone's great at this level now. And here's where I need you to really focus in. What are some of the conversations you're having with your brother as he gets ready for his big day?
So for Curtis, there's some conversations we've had for sure. And we talk about football. We talk about technique. We talk about specifics. We talk about O-line and D-line and getting into like all the nitty-gritty stuff. But like Curtis is someone that I genuinely know he's dealt with his own stuff, his own demons. And came on the other end. Like he's had to work his ass off, like more than anyone I've ever seen come through that Guelph program. And that's not just because he's my brother. Like, I don't know if Tom saw him when he first showed up at Guelph and who he is today. And who he was a year before you saw him was a completely different person. That guy has transformed his body. He's transformed his mind. He went through some hard times mentally. And he is now one of those guys who, one, is an academic All-Canadian and also an incredible football player who's doing this, like, well, he wants to be a CFL player. He'd be the first ever CFL player who becomes a vet when they're at Guelph. Like, he's an animal biology pushing through all this stuff with still the dream to be a CFL player. And it's not a dream because he financially wants to get rich and go to the CFL, because he'd be better off financially if he just went straight into vet school and pushed his way through. But he genuinely loves and cares for the game and wants to accomplish this for his own like well-being and mindset and everything. And he wants to prove to himself and to all the people that have doubted him that he can do it. And he faces it along every step. And that's why I genuinely believe he'll be able to accomplish it, is because he has that. Because like as much as we can talk about it and as much as I can tell someone this is what you have to do to be successful and this is what I did to be successful, like it's internal motivation that's going to actually push you through. And it's a desire to want to accomplish. It's a desire because you love football that is going to push you through. And like understanding that is something he has. And I that's one thing I don't have to teach him. And that's one thing I don't think you can teach to anyone. And he genuinely, like, the work he put in this offseason, Tom saw him at the combine, kid came in there and he ran a 4.99 like hand clock flat 5.1, and he's 287 pounds. Like he's got himself down to 12% body fat. He worked like no one I've ever seen, like focusing in on his training when he was in the gym every day at 5 o'clock and trained 2-3 times a day. Then he did all of his nutritional stuff and supplementation and did all this while still being an academic All-Canadian, going in animal biology, still being there for his brother's wedding in Panama, still being there for my son's birthday and being there for everything. Like when you talk about a guy, and this gets me a little bit emotional because of how proud I genuinely am of who he is. Sure, maybe his tape wasn't where it was to be invited to the national. Sure, teams are going to doubt him because they're going to get things wrong. And I can genuinely tell you, like, teams don't give him the opportunity and they don't draft him and he has to go undrafted or he has to do whatever it takes. They're going to be wrong and teams are going to regret it because he's one of those guys that regardless of where he is today, like tomorrow he's going to be better. And it's not an if, like he's going to. Like he has a care factor beyond anyone else I know. And like that's where you're going to see the difference. Like there's guys who are freak athletes. And, you know, like Kian, the day when he was leaving Guelph, like the fact that he got drafted as late as he was, that's a whole other story. But Kian was incredible at Guelph, but he didn't get the stats for whatever reason. And he also does work his ass off. I'm not saying he doesn't, but like there's guys like that who come out who are incredible athletes who are going to just kill it. But then there's guys who just work so hard that they're going to force themselves through to doing a great job. And that's Curtis. Like he is now he's where he is today. He's an incredible athlete who's ready to play in the CFL athletically. And he's got the work ethic to figure it out, technique, if it's offensive line, if it's defensive line. An interesting conversation I've had with him, and I would give this advice to anyone who would ask. A lot of teams have talked to him about flopping from D-line to offensive line, and this was a conversation he had at Guelph. The advice I always gave him was, unless you love what you're doing in football or in anything in life, you're not going to make it. So even if offensive line, your body is made to do better in offensive line, or it's an easier pathway for making the CFL, whatever that means. Unless you genuinely love it and care, that you're not going to make it. If he flips to offensive line when he gets to the CFL, that's his own decision. And if he flipped to Guelph, that's his own decision. That's great. But unless you genuinely love and care about what you're doing, it's not going to work for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I talked about it a little bit on the podcast that we did talking about this, the regional combine, just a couple weeks ago or last week. But the number one person that jumped off the page as soon as you looked at them was Curtis. And like everybody has seen him, even just in this past season, he is the road grader. He's, you know, between him and Josh Campbell, they flip flop between a one tech and a three tech. And I think they mm-hmm. both have the ability to do so. And Josh Campbell was there and he did his thing as well. But when you look at Curtis, and now suddenly it's not like there's no barrel anymore, but his shoulders are just as broad, if not broader. And he's got the arms and the length. And I'm looking at him like, are you almost too light? Like, what's going on here? And then he does the one-on-ones. And Ethan Kalra, who got invited to the National Combine, who is a fantastic offensive lineman, Curtis got him. And he got him good on at least one rep. And so I'm looking around being like, oh my God, what the hell is in these Woodmansey jeans to just be unbelievable football players? But yeah, he really wowed me. I was very surprised. I was talking to Deshaun at Persevere and I said, I think Curtis Woodmansey is going to get the call up to go because I really loved what he was doing here. He tested really well. Like you said, I loved everything that I saw from him on that day.
Yeah, no, I think he's going to, he's physically ready. He's put it in, like, you can see in the one-on-ones, he's fast enough, he's strong enough, he can put it all together. It's going to come down to when he gets to training camp, because even if he gets drafted, I think he'll end up on a team. Like, who knows about the draft process, but if no team gives an opportunity, that's, to be honest with me, it's a crime, and it is what it is, right? Like, CFL's tough, football's tough, it's business, teams have to make their decisions, but that kid deserves the opportunity to show what he got. And when he goes to camp, he is going to turn some heads.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, sticking with the CFL now, getting back to your story here a little bit. Obviously, once again, like you said, it is that business. You're going through things. But to have the Johnny Manziel kind of era and everything that was happening at the Cats, to see Jeremiah Masoli really step into himself, become that solid quarterback, and deal with heartbreaking injuries. And now he's over at Ottawa. And even though I am a diehard Ticat fan, have been once ever since that I could understand what football was, if that dude wins a Grey Cup, I will be happier than anything, because I just, even without having to actually know him, I just love and appreciate everything that he brings to the game. And now having Bo Levi Mitchell, and then unfortunately he goes to the same injury, and you guys have a whole list of injuries at quarterback this past season. What was that process like of the quarterback room that seems to be changing just as often as your head coach has changed at Guelph?
So yeah, when I get to Ticats, we got Dane and Masoli, and honestly love both those guys for their own individual reasons. Like Masoli's one of the best people I've known as a quarterback. Like I only wish him the best. Like you're saying, like if he, like other than us winning a Ticat, a Grey Cup, like Ticats winning, I'd be happy to see him do it. You know, obviously, like he's had the injuries and everything else, and he's awesome person, and was a great quarterback and a great leader when I got there. And we had Dane too, who, you know, called him Danger. He was unreal. We had that, you know, the 2021 East Finals against Toronto, and he just absolutely lit it up, went 16 for 16 perfect. He had that one play, there was a fumble, guy was running it back, he snatched it out of the guy's hand to save us, you know, losing points right before half. He was awesome. Like I consider him a genuine friend. He's got an amazing family, you know, he's good person. I thought he was a great quarterback too, and I really wish him the best in his retirement. He's coaching now. And then I've got Bo, and Bo's awesome. He's just like complete different dude than those two other guys. Honestly, all of them have their own like incredible personality, but Bo is such like a leader, football guy. Unfortunately, we had all the injuries of last year, but I am so excited to see what he can do with like full year. Let's keep him upright and healthy. That's, I think, something that's my job there. I got to keep that guy healthy. Got to keep that guy upright. But when he gets going, like he commands the offense really well. You know, Scott Milanovic, like with his offense being in place and getting a full offseason to work with each other and a full training camp, and then also having the offensive line, I think we're bringing back, and receivers, the offense we have, like people might not be expecting what I'm expecting, but I'm expecting great things from this team. I genuinely
damn straight, man.
Taylor is a backup. Like Taylor's the fact, the way he came in as a rookie and stepped up in every moment and played and didn't let the offense fall off and did what was expected of him and then some, and led our group. Like, it was awesome to see. We have a great team going on. I'm really excited. I'm really excited for Scott Milanovic too as a head coach, and then keeping O in the building as president. Like, I feel like we got best of both worlds with everything here.
Coulter, last question I have for you. Michael McDonald, Brian Clough, Tom Gredis. Who's winning in a fight?
Gotta go Coach Mike, though. He's got the 35 years in RCMP. He's got some chicks. He might not have to reach on either of those guys, but
you know, I'm obviously putting you on the spot with that. I love all three of those guys, as I know you do, as I know Tom does. He hasn't had the pleasure of meeting Tom Gredis, so I'm hoping to set that up for some Toronto football content. But like the last thing I do just have to say, we've talked about Coach McDonald already a ton. Me and Tom have been speaking glowingly since his return, and it has been a huge thing for me and my Guelph fandom that has waxed and waned a bit over the last couple of years with him leaving and now returning. At the time of us releasing this podcast, which will be a day from our recording, it'll be 4 days since Coach Mike's 67th birthday, if my math's correct on it. Of course, I believe you wore 67 at Guelph as well. So I guess the last thing, because I know when Coach sees this, and I'll let Tom still wrap up, I know Coach is going to just light up just seeing the three of us on here. I hope you'll both follow suit. Happy belated birthday, Coach McDonald, from all of us here.
Happy birthday, Coach. I want to see him do it again. When he turned 60, I think he did 284-pound bench press at the age of 60. I want to see what he's pushing now. I bet it's three plates.
Oh, yeah.
I know her, but
easy. Happy belated, Coach. Yeah, and once again, we've talked about it before. There's a reason why of all of the changes that have happened this past season, one of the two head our coaching changes that we posted about on our Instagram was Coach Mike McDonald. And there's it's little mystery in terms of why we decided to do that. But for a steward of the game, for somebody who is so incredible, it's just he's a no-brainer in that.
Yeah. And Luff's back too. They're bringing the band back together.
And Clopper is back. When you, man, we've talked about it on here as well, but when you look at that Griffin team, the players that are on the field, if they can stay healthy, and you see the caliber of coach that they have right now,
And then the support they're getting, you know, the facilities, the everyone in the back end, all the great people that are at Guelph, you know, I don't know if it's going to be next year. I don't know if it's the year after, but that team's ascending. That's mm-hmm. programming along shortly.
It is going to be a great time to be a Guelph Griffin fan very, very soon here, which is very exciting. Last question here that I have for you. We talked about it a little bit here and kind of glancing, but you have Coach O. And when you see, I had the a privilege of being a part of a Ticat kind of sponsor event where a few folks who are potentially looking at sponsoring the Ticats and all their partners came to Tim Hortons Field. And he's there as the keynote speaker. And just his presence there, you could tell he's a natural born leader. The way that he speaks to everybody, even as people who are not his players, everybody is ready to run through a brick wall for that guy. While I am sorry that he's not going to be the head coach, I think still having him around the program, I am so happy about, because I truly believe any place that has him is better, even as somebody on the outside looking in. Can you talk about your relationship with Coach O and who he is as a person?
Yeah, like I have said, I genuinely believe he's the best football coach I've ever had. He's what he does so well is he just builds the people around him. And he does it every day because he doesn't just focus on who you are as a football player. He focuses on building you as a better person, which will translate to being a better football player. And he focuses so much on the process that it just makes it so you will grow. Like anytime I've been on a team with him, like the amount we grow as a team, and you see it at the end of every year that he's there, the team who starts the year is not the same team that ends it, because he's not just focused on putting the best talent on the field. He's focused on putting the best players, best people that become a better team that works well together. And for him, like even now that he's just like, he's the president of football, like he's still there. Like I've talked to him multiple times through this offseason. He has his phone number to all the players. Like, you can call him anytime, text with him. And he's the type of guy that you want to do that. It's not just like, oh, he's the president of football. Like he has connections with his players. He has connections with everyone. Like I've spent multiple times talking to him, not just about football, but about family stuff and real connections. Like he's a good, good person who focuses on transitioning, like how focuses on making people better. Also, he's just an incredible football player too, and football mind. Like, I'm talking a lot about the person himself, like as a personality, but guy's one of the most winningest players in like CFL history. He's got, I don't know, four or five Grey Cups, and won them with the Argos, and won them as a player, and he's won them as a coach, as a DB coach, and as a defensive coordinator, and all this other stuff. Like, yeah, you can't say anything that's like, yeah, you can't speak highly enough. Guy's a Hall of Famer for a reason on the field, plus as a person. And he's talked about it multiple times. Like when he transitioned mentally from the just being great at football and then also made the players around him great, like when he was a football player too, he did the same thing as when he was a coach. Like he made all like the players around him, like the DBs that he played with, he talked about, he worked with them. Obviously they put in the work too, but they became all-stars. And when he cared about that, that's when he started getting better. And then he went to the NFL again. And it's the same thing. Like that's what he instills in the players. Like if you work as getting yourself better and then your unit better and everyone around you better, you will be better and the team will be better. And that's the stuff that he instills in him. And he just does it with everything. Like every day in the meetings, he is something that will make you want to be a better person.
Coulter, thank you so much for joining us, sharing your story, shedding light on your experience through the draft, and talking so glowingly and so beautifully about your brother that truthfully, I was getting emotional hearing that myself. I'm so happy for your success, not only, of course, like I said, as a Griffin alum, but representing Toronto football and, of course, your family so proudly and honorably in everything you do. So, Coulter, best of luck as you continue to train, getting ready for this upcoming season, and best of luck to your brother and your family with his big day coming up.
Thanks, guys. I also want to thank you guys. Like the work that you guys are doing with OUA to shine light on these players and these people that we're speaking about, like you guys are doing an incredible job. And the content you put out is genuinely awesome. Just super entertaining. And I love listening to it. Love listening to the podcast, all the posts, like everything. Thank you guys. Thank you for having me, giving me the opportunity to speak and being able to, you know, also just catch up with you guys. It's good seeing you guys.
Ah, oh, you're a stud, Coulter. Oski wee wee, buddy.
Awesome. Thank
you. I know you still bleed blue on the inside, Coulter. Go Toronto. All right, that's a wrap.
Black and gold, baby. Leave them.
Hey, dude, we'll agree. He's a grip.
Pulled all the way here.
Let's go.
Go Grips. Go Grips. Yeah, let's agree on that one. That's a wrap on this episode. Me and Tom will have some other special guests talking about draft stories or a little content as the National Combine comes up that we'll talk to you about. So stay tuned. We'll talk to you about it right here at the 55.